First person to comment with a moment in Shakespeare that passes the Bechdel test, we mail you a sticker.
Hello, we are here at Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, Arizona, and welcome to episode 39 of Untamed Shrews, Women Talk Theater, presented by the Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Dawn.
And I'm Becky. Today is a casual, silly, shrews-only episode where we will be answering some listener questions and chatting through a bunch of mini topics.
Yes, thank you to everyone who submitted questions and topics for the episode. But first, shrew chicken time. Who's going first? Becky, you just got back from
to
a
say,
fabulous vacation,
yeah.
so you go first.
Okay, so I literally this morning that we were are recording landed in Phoenix from Hawaii, where I spent the week with my parents.
Amazing.
They're doing they're coming to the Southwest again. They're in Lake Havasu City right now. They're gonna come to Flagstaff, then they're gonna finish in Durango. But to start it all off, they first went to Hawaii, and so
Wow.
being in their adult single child, I followed them.
Yes. From tropical to arid.
Yeah, adding on Hawaii was a very interesting combo here.
Well, so they, I don't know if it was, or I can't remember if it was specific. So they just had their anniversary, their 50th wedding anniversary. So
Yay.
maybe it was part of that. So that was really nice to be able to join them and just lounge on the beach, you know? And just before that, I went to Las Vegas to see a friend who was on the touring show of Company. And then I also did a night in Cedar City, Utah to catch the Shakespeare Festival there.
Wow, you really have been all around.
The past 2 weeks have been a lot.
Yeah.
Good, but a lot.
Well, it's so funny because you started a new job, and I was like, wait, did she start her new job? And I was like, technically, yes, she just hasn't been there very much.
I did
She's
2 days
been
and then I peaced out for a little bit. But
gone.
first, Hawaii.
Did you eat some good, yummy food and
Lots of like poke and like ahi tuna. So there's like a heavy Japanese influence, at least in Oahu where we were. And this is so silly, but there's this like ice cream treat that's shaped like a fish, and it's like it looks like it, or it feels like it's like a waffle cone, but it's like fish shaped, and it's ice cream, and there's red bean paste, and that ended my days a lot of the time. Like just stop at
Yum.
7-Eleven at the end of the day to grab one of those.
That sounds delicious.
But then of course also tried like Polynesian and like Hawaiian specific foods as well, like poi, which is like a way to like grind up a vegetable. That was a terrible way to describe that. Hannah, when you were in Hawaii a couple of years ago, which island were you on?
We were in Honolulu.
Okay.
And we went up to the North Shore a little bit, but mostly we were in Honolulu.
That's where we were as well.
I tried a lot of foods that I really liked and a lot of foods I didn't. I remember specifically not liking poi very much, but then there was other things I really liked. Yay, that's so fun.
So tired, but back.
Anything
else?
No. Oh, well, I well, we wrapped up the summer season. I don't think we've recorded since the summer season has
Oh,
ended.
yeah, no, we haven't.
So I don't think at the time we recorded, I was in Julius Caesar, but I did end up doing both shows, Merry Wives and Julius Caesar. So that was really nice to be doing both of those.
Yes, thank you for doing both of the shows in the end.
The juxtaposition between the two. I think I'm performing my one woman show at the Science Fest here in Flagstaff at
Nice.
the end of September.
I saw you on the list. Yeah.
Gosh, I'm sure there's other updates, but my mind
Yeah.
is jello.
Nice.
Anyone else?
I kind of gave you guys the debrief on my situation, which is just the opposite of Becky's. We're all stuck at home sick. So it's been a wild ride. Yeah, I feel like, but except I'm not sick. So that's been nice. And I got to do my first like aerial class, like where I was really back. It was kind of funky. I'm actually doing half of two different aerial classes, which was very kind of Morgan to let me do just because like baby bedtime scheduling is like so funky. So I'm actually taking the tail end of a, I don't know if it's 2B or 2A, I can't remember now, but I was like, it'll just be fun review for me. I'll just come like, you know, warm myself up and then like do skills reviews with you guys. And then I'm taking the beginning of a 4A flow class. So I'm really just doing conditioning with them and not learning their routine. So it's kind of funny. I'm doing like, I'm like, you know, like flipping the normal class pattern by doing, and then just like doing pretty disparate skills levels on the same night. But I think it's going to be really good for me. It felt good just to like be in a class, taking class, hanging out with people again. And I'm also back to teaching. And my 1A class is packed, so it's super fun. So yeah, I'm having a good time. There's two little boys in my youth 1A, and they have so much energy. And every time I start class with them, I'm like, okay, like gear up, you're in for this in like 8 years. This is gonna be Blake, just like a ball of energy. I mean, energy in the best way, but they're super energetic and it's really fun. So I've really enjoyed getting back to the studio in a more serious way. But I feel like that's like the biggest news here. I don't have anything else really huge.
That's a big.
Yeah, that's big.
Yeah, it feels good. It feels really good. Still, you know, dealing with some of the postpartum stuff, but nothing that affects Ariel anymore. So that's good.
Well, mine's similar. I feel like a lot of this aerial stuff, my 1A, Lero adult 1A is also crazy packed. It was so packed that we actually opened a second section of it because it was full to 10 and there was also like 5 people on the wait list. So we opened up a whole second class, which is crazy. So that's been good. Although I did have to miss the first week because I was in Cedar City.
Are you teaching both of the Lear 1As?
So I'm teaching a youth 1A and an adult 1A, but the other adult 1A is being taught by someone else. The one that got opened. Yeah. Let's see, since the summer shows closed. Yeah. I mean, big stuff for me was prepping for the Utah Shakespeare trip. So went there for the, you know, most better part of a week, saw 6 shows, saw all but one, but I am hoping to get back to maybe try to see that other one we didn't see. And I'm hoping to talk about it today, but I think I saw the best Taming of the Shrew I've ever seen.
Nice.
And I'm actually like thinking about like maybe a mini episode or an episode about, is Taming of the Shrew as bad as we think it is, yes or no? Not saying I have the answer. But anyway, this was actually a very good production. So props to Utah Shakespeare for really, yeah, I really think they did a good job with what they have. So that was nice. What else? Just, yeah, getting back into the swing of teaching Ariel. Jacob went back to school. And being 3 months married, things are just really busy. But I feel like a lot of changes kind of came at me in the last few weeks. I am changing up my workout routine, and I got a job offer that came out of kind of nowhere. That would be another additional part-time job that I'm kind of considering doing, and which would mean a lot of like I would be just like extra busy moving things around. And yeah, so like, because at the beginning of the summer, right after Jacob and I got married, I switched to block scheduling for all of my several jobs, which has really worked for me. I still answer texts and emails oftentimes when I'm technically off, but I'm getting better. So that's done. It's been really good. But yeah, now my week might even change again. I don't know. So we'll see. So just trying to figure out what, you know, what my week is going to look like every week. Yeah, I also feel like, I've just had like a hard kind of body image few months. So I'm just hoping that maybe in the next few months I can, just feel a little bit better in my body. So fingers are crossed. So yeah. What else? Being married is awesome. Jacob's great. Not next week, but the week after is my annual trip to Tahoe with my family.
Oh
It's like
yeah, yay.
20th anniversary,
Oh wow.
which is crazy. We've been going since I was a wee child.
Wow.
Now
Cool.
my nephew is 11.
Yeah.
So the mind be boggled. So that's exciting and that's coming up. But yeah, just looking forward to fall and the change that usually comes with the changing of a season. So
Cool.
yeah.
Well, nice check-in. It's kind of fun too that we're just get to like keep chatting with each other. And
Yes. No, we have not
actually,
had a shrews only episode in a while.
I know. And the first topic we came up with came because we were all hanging out and we started talking about it, and then we were like, no, this is a podcast chat for sure.
Yeah.
Stop talking about it. So how did it come up when we were chatting? We started talking about the Bechdel test, guys.
What it was is that
What?
Jacob asked me what the Bechdel test was.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, somehow I had brought it up. I was like, oh,
Yeah.
that doesn't pass the Bechdel test or something like that,
Yeah,
or
yeah.
a movie or something. And he was like, what's
Yeah.
the Bechdel test? So then I told him and he was like,
Yeah.
oh, and he like kind of started thinking about it. And so then when we were hanging by the pool, I was like, oh yeah, Jacob and I were talking about the Bechdel test yesterday. And then we were like, oh my gosh, wait, does Shakespeare pass the Bechdel test?
Yeah, I think maybe like just kind of defining the Bechdel test, which
Yeah. I looked it up today. Did you look it
oh,
up,
good.
Becky?
Okay. Because I was like, I'm now realizing I have not
Yeah.
looked it up. So,
I looked it up and it was exactly what I thought when we were chatting. So I feel very, very
okay.
confident. It is that there are two women. It's supposed to be for movies. So there are two women in the show
Are they
that.
named? Is it two named women or can
Nope.
they? Okay.
Two women, just
Any
two
women.
women, and that they speak to each other and that they speak to each other about something other than a man.
And that's all. And is it like a certain amount of time? And it
Nope.
just, no. Okay.
That's it. It's so narrow, but you would be shocked. Like when I was looking it up today, it had a list of like things that pass the Bechdel test and things that don't. Like I thought it was so funny. Like Mad Max Fury Road like passes the Bechdel test, but Up doesn't. Toy Story doesn't.
Oh.
Toy Story
Now we were
doesn't.
also, remember how we were debating this? Does it have
Yep.
to be about a room, like a man in which is
No.
a romantic connection, or is just
No.
any man in general?
It's just those three things I said. Two women speak to each other about something other than a man.
Okay. So it doesn't need to
So,
be, so even if it's talking about a father or a brother or a coworker or
yes. Yeah.
whatever.
Yeah. If they're talking about a man, doesn't count. They have to be talking about something other than a man, but there's no like length of time that it has to be. It's
Right.
just that they have to be two women in the show to begin with, which is really funny because I brought up the Mad Max thing to Sean and he's like, yeah, that show's mostly women. He's like, the main antagonist is a mute man, so it definitely passes the Bechdel test. I was like, oh, how cool. Maybe I need to start being a Mad Max fan. I've never seen a Mad Max movie. So I was trying to think through, like Shakespeare plays that might pass the Bechdel test. I'd love to hear from the Shrew crew if anyone's like, oh, you missed an obvious one. But I can't think of one that passes the Bechdel test.
Not a single one.
No, I thought about Much Ado About Nothing because they're talking about Beatrice in front of Beatrice, but they're talking about Beatrice and Benedict, so they are talking about a man. And there are so many shows where two women don't even speak. Hannah, you might have brought up the only one that I can think of that might be accurate, which is you brought up that Amelia and Desdemona talk to each other about Barbara,
Yeah.
the mother's maid, Barbara, and I think that that would count.
Yeah, because, well, okay, devil's advocate here. So it's Desdemona talking about Barbara, but Barbara, or she also talks about how Barbara was scorned by her lover.
Oh
But he's not mentioned. I actually think that it's only the word, Like there, he does not have a name.
Yeah, but I think
And
they still might be the
count.
you'd have a hard time arguing that the topic wasn't a man because it
Yeah.
was a woman who was scorned by a man.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so
How about when the nurse comes in to see Juliet and they have that whole silly scene about how she doesn't have her breath, but
yes,
she's
how her
still trying to
bones
get,
ache
right,
and
but
her,
she's still trying to get information about a man. So does that count?
She's trying to get information about a man, because I also thought about Juliet and the nurse in the first scene when she's talking about weaning Juliet. But that whole conversation is leading up to the so I think that one might count even more, because the nurse and Juliet are genuinely just having a conversation about how old Juliet is and when Juliet was weaned. Lady Capulet is also there and she's about to bring up a man, but
Right.
the conversation between Juliet and the nurse has nothing to do with a man.
And the nurse has that giant speech about
Yeah.
like, how old she was. Wait.
She talks
The
about her
nurse
husband.
talks about her husband.
I know.
Shoot.
But I'm not sure, because it's like she just the topic of conversation is not. Yeah, it's so hard. I think this is why people have added like secondary levels to rules about the Bechdel test, because
Right.
the Bechdel test is those three things, but I think if you look a lot of places, there is a lot of like argument about like the different, like, is it more than 30 seconds? Is like they, do they have to have names, like Becky was mentioning, and like
Yeah.
all of this stuff? You can definitely get into gray areas. And then I was thinking a lot of it could depend on casting, right?
Yeah.
Because depending on how you cast certain characters like
Oh,
Ariel or Puck or some of the fairies, that might
wow.
change whether or not those shows pass the Bechdel test. Of course,
Yes.
originally, no Shakespeare play passed the Bechdel test on stage
Right, because there was
because it was all
physically,
men.
yeah.
So
That's
I
a
don't
really good
know.
point. Wait, I just thought of another one. Okay, so which history is it that the princess in French has that whole
Yes.
conversation with her maid
Henry
about
the Fifth.
Henry the Fifth?
Yeah.
They don't talk
Al.
about a man, right? They talk about
No.
they're like having a French
I
lesson.
actually think that that would count, because later it becomes funny because, of course, she's going to try to speak some English to Henry,
Right.
but the conversation is not about Henry. It's simply about learning English.
Right. So that one I think
So
might count.
maybe. Now, remind me, Hannah, in Henry the Eighth, Anne Boleyn has a conversation with her lady in waiting
Yeah,
or
her
a
maid.
nurse. And aren't
Yeah.
they talking about dancing?
Oh, they do enter the party and they might just chat about dancing before Henry asks her to dance.
I can't remember. I hated that play so much that I blocked it all out, but it's possible.
I liked it. I just saw it at Utah Shakespeare.
Yeah, I also think perhaps Pericles passes the Bechdel test.
I
Maybe
do not know.
between Miranda and her stepmother. Oh no, there's a
Oh,
man there, but
Mariana, what's her name?
Mariana, that's no,
Mariana?
Miranda.
Miranda's in Tempest. Are you talking about
Isn't
Pericles?
it Miranda and Pericles too?
I thought
No,
it was like
okay.
something more water related, like marina or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're right. You're right. It's something more watery. Yeah. But I think maybe when she's talking about killing her, but she's literally, they're literally talk. One of the women is literally talking about murdering the other woman. So I'm not sure.
She's hiring a man to kill her.
She does hire a man to do it.
Yeah.
So I can't remember if he's there the whole time though.
Well, he's not.
Anyway, it's very tricky to find one in Shakespeare that passes the Bechdel test.
This is quite hilarious.
Yeah, it's obviously not like a clear.
I'm trying to think, do I'm just like looking at a list of play names. I mean,
Yeah.
there are so many sisters, right?
Right. I know,
Are
but they don't talk about anything but men.
except men.
Rosalind and Celia have so many conversations, they're all about men.
Although they do talk about going into disguise, right, Bex? So like there's a moment where they're just talking about, oh, but does
But
that
because a
count
man is
because
sending
of
them into exile.
or yeah.
And she's going to disguise herself as a man, so does
Yeah,
that
I think so. Oh, so tricky.
Do any of the sisters in King Lear talk about anything except Lear?
No. Or Edmund. I mean, they fight with each other about Edmund, but that doesn't count either because they're fighting about Edmund. So, no, I think it's pretty dismal as far as Shakespeare goes.
Pretty dismal. Oh, how about Love's Labors? There are just a plethora of lovely ladies in that show, but do
I
they talk
know.
anything except, but they talk a lot about like games and stuff. Like
Maybe, but
Love's
they're
Labors
also
has a
talking
lot
a
of
lot about not talking about men. They're
right.
talking a lot about not falling in love.
I feel like there might be something in there. Because they talk a lot
Maybe.
about like, let's go play blah blah
Yeah.
blah. Let's go play this game out on the courtyard. There could be something like that in there. But the fact that
Yeah.
we're having to like hunt one down.
Dig.
Yeah. The smallest paragraph, or
Yeah.
like the three lines or whatever.
Yeah, just for any little piece of it. But yeah, so just not super prevalent in Shakespeare. But again, he was usually dealing with two or three actors at a time that were playing the women in his plays. I mean, sometimes, maxing out at like four. So it's not like he had a ton.
Who is it? Is it Violet's speech? The like, she gave me this ring. Like, what means she? When she?
Yeah, that's a monologue.
Oh, it's a
That
monologue.
is a woman. Oh, it's a monologue. You're right. I
It's a
was like,
monologue.
yeah, that's true. They have to
Darn
talk
it.
to each other.
Never mind. Rule number one, two women.
Talking to each other.
Talking to each other. Thank God.
Does Amelia in Kinsman, she speaks to her maid, right? But it is about marriage.
She also speaks to her sister quite a bit, but I again think they're only talking about men. They
Yeah.
talk about war,
Yeah.
but I think it's, yeah, the two Amazonians and two noble kinsmen. Well, if Christine's listening to this, she's probably screaming through her computer saying all of the times we're missing, especially in Two Noble Kinsmen,
Yeah.
when two women talk to each other. But
Long
yeah.
story short, on this mini topic, it's tough.
It's really tough. It's also just interesting. Like, I think every once in a while the Bechdel test resurfaces in popular culture, and it's just interesting to like frame things that way and think about things that way. And then of course, like even expand, I mean, that's just one test of representation and diversity, just one narrow test of representation and diversity that we can use to be like, how is this doing? I think that we combat this a lot in the way that we stage our Shakespeare plays by having women play various characters who have interests that are not men. So, whether those characters were written as male or female often doesn't matter in the subject matter that they're tackling. When it does, it really does, like in Titus, like someone has to knock someone else up, and then like really it matters if they're male or female. And you have to like get that right, but most of the time it doesn't. You can recast the characters, and then it easily, like I'm sure both of our summer shows passed the Bechdel test because
Oh, certainly,
we
yeah.
had women playing, politicians and conspirators and talking about all kinds of things that weren't men. Well, were
Wait,
men, but
there's gotta be something in Merry Wives, right?
no.
They
No.
never talk about anything except Falstaff.
Or Master Ford.
Do they talk about the buck basket, of course, but they're putting a man in the buck
Yeah.
basket.
Yeah. I
Wow.
mean, the whole, I thought of that one too immediately. And then I was like, nah, the whole plot of that play is men.
Right.
Because even Anne, like Mistress Page and Mr. Page wanting to marry their daughter, but it's like, but I don't think the two wives talk about Anne.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about that too. I was like, there's got to be a mother and daughter scene, right? Is there even a mother and daughter scene in any of Shakespeare?
Yes,
There's
there
a lot of
definitely is.
father-daughter scenes, but are there any mother-daughter scenes?
I mean, I think there is in Richard the Third. I think
And I guess in
young
Romeo and
Elizabeth is in
Juliet.
that. And
Okay.
is she with her mom? But I don't know that they speak. And
Yeah.
then, yeah, of course, Lady Capulet and Juliet. And then there is in Pericles, Mariana's or whatever her name is that we can't remember, her mother returns suddenly to life at the end. I think they get a mother-daughter scene. But yeah, those are also pretty few and far between, of course, in Shakespeare.
Winter's Tale has, it's not a mother-daughter scene, but it's, what's it, Hermione and Paulina? But do they? Do they?
Well, what's weird about Hermione and Paulina is that they're like besties, right? But you like never see them together because Hermione dies and then Paulina like works on her behalf, right? Paulina speaks to baby Perdita. But Perdita does not respond because she's a baby.
There is no age requirements in
the test. But what does she say to Perdita? Does it have anything to do with a man?
Probably something. Doesn't she? Well, no. There's, who's the guy that gets pursued by the bear? He has his little speech that he says to Perdita. But Paulina says something to Perdita, right? Before she like gives Perdita away.
I don't remember that. I can't remember that. No.
Guys, I thought this was going to be easier.
No, it's so hard. It's not easy.
My goodness.
It's not easy.
Well, how do we feel about this mini topic? More to say about the Bechdel test?
Nope, I don't have any more to say. I think this is kind of fun, though. Yeah. It's fun to just like jog your memory on all the Shakespeare stuff. I just say, if we're wrong, shrews, let us know. Make a comment. Tell us what we missed. We want to hear it.
That would actually be fun. Maybe we should do a poll if anyone can prove a moment of happiness.
Send the receipts.
Yeah. First person to comment with a moment in Shakespeare that passes the Bechdel test, we mail you a sticker.
Great.
We're sending you a Shrews sticker.
Also, actually kind of off topic, but on topic, we just want to hear more from you. I've had a lot of people like, that I didn't even know listen to the Shrews be like, blah, 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 something on the Shrews. Or like, Anthony, I see you out there, Anthony. He was like talking about how like he's listening to the Shrews and like learned all this stuff from us. And he was like, this really helped me work on blah, 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 or like learn about blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I didn't even know you listened to the Shrews. So we just want to hear more from you guys. So if you, especially if you are an avid listener and have been through, I mean, gosh, guys, like, what is this, year four, year three. So if you're an avid listener, just like, please send us a message, send us an email, like message us on Instagram. We just want to like talk to you guys, because I feel like we feel so siloed because we're over here talking to each other and we don't know like anything about you guys. So please reach out. We'd love to hear from you, but that's a random side topic. But
I think speaking of them, though, we did hear from some listeners with questions for this week. And since we don't have a lot of time, we're having a little bit of a shorter episode this week. Maybe we can each just pick the one we want to answer the most, starting with Becky.
Drum roll.
I'll do, well, it's not really, okay, so the question is weirdest onstage moment, and it's not weird, but it was one of the shows, for God of Vengeance with Flag Shakes in 2019. And I was on stage with Dustin Noga.
Dusty!
And it was the two of us in a scene, and all of a sudden, like, Dustin's eyes just got like red, like not hit the skin on his face. Like there was like a flash of red in his eyes.
Whoa.
Where did this come from? And I mean, surely it must have been like whatever the lights were, but I was like trying to like recreate this. And I was just such, and it was a moment of like contention between our two characters. But I was just like, I just feel like I was transported to a different place.
Oh, cool.
That is very terrifying.
Yeah. And not like the whites of his eyes weren't red, but it was like like the colored part of his eyes, like there was just like a flash of red. I don't know,
like they are when they go red in a photograph, like they were just like, but red, like on stage. Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
Crazy.
has he heard this story?
I'm pretty sure I told him. I don't know if I told him like after that show or maybe at
Yeah.
closing, but I'm pretty sure I told him. I don't know if he remembers.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Hannah, do you have one?
Well, so I'm gonna take weirdest, and like
Yeah.
change kind of what that means to me. So I didn't think about this very hard, but the first thing that came to mind was when I played Desdemona. I guess more just like the weirdest experience I've had was I was like certain that the stage combat was not gonna bug me. Like you guys know, like I usually find emotional recall very cathartic. I usually find like very highly emotional scenes quite safe. Like they don't really worry me too much. They don't usually like affect me in anything other than a positive way, because I feel like I can very much like pour all of my anger, frustration, sadness of all the rest of the world kind of into that moment. So I actually find them very helpful. So I was like super not worried about playing Desdemona, even though obviously she has very bad violence, like, on her. And I was like, yeah. So I was like super not worried about it. But, she gets killed by her husband. And I just remembered that when we were working on that, my death scene, like we were working on the, ch we did like a kind of combo because, she gets smothered by the pillow, blah, blah, blah. Well, there is a moment where, it was decided that he was going to choke me. And he was going to do like a, what are these called? Like the back, like when you go behind someone and stick their neck like in your elbow. What's that called? Arm bar or something like that.
Like a
So,
choke.
anyway, we'd like rehearsed that. And I just remember like leaving that night and I could feel the actors like hands around my neck like all night. And it was just
Oh.
so creepy. He didn't
Yeah.
like do anything wrong. He didn't like, leave a mark or something. It was
Yeah.
more like the emotional, I don't know. So I just remembered like being very shocked by that because I was like, this is weird. I've never really experienced something where I've like taken something home so much. But I distinctly remember I actually went straight from rehearsal to an aerial class and I'm like driving to aerial just like in complete silence. Like, this is strange.
Yeah.
Necessarily like scared or like, yeah, I don't know. It was just like I could feel the like presence of the scene still sort of like on my body. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I've never had anything else like that happen to me before. So I
Yeah.
definitely took it home. But that was in a rehearsal, not in a like show. So slightly
I
different.
think that's fair. I think that's also a really good example of why we talk about cycles of consent, because you could be like, there's no way this is going to bother me. And then come back to the next rehearsal and be like, that really bothered me. I need to not do that again if possible. Or I need to have a check-in and a check-out before and after so that I don't take it home or whatever. But like,
Closing out the
yeah.
mall. It didn't bother me again after that. I mean, we did it,
Yeah.
we ran for like what, 3 weeks or whatever, and it never bugged me
Yeah.
again after that. It was just that it must have just been that first time we worked on the
Yeah.
scene. It's like, oh wow, that's kind of alarming. Like
Yeah. Well, I
I
mean, it is,
remember when I
it's
was
very
in
personal violence. Like,
I warned my mom when she came to see that show. I was like, Mom, I do get murdered in quite an intense way. So just so you know. And she's like, thanks, honey.
Aww. Mama.
Thanks. That's it.
I was not on stage for, but I still want to use it. I was in the show. No, I was on stage. I was on stage. I was on stage, and it was the first year of Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival when we did Twelfth Night in Heritage Square. And someone really high on some kind of intense psychedelic, because this is just like an outdoor stage in the middle of downtown Flagstaff. And there's this huge building behind the stage area, and it has like one of those fire escape stairwells. Do you know what the one, you guys probably know the one on the back of Babbitt Ford, and then it has like a little balcony to that door into the top of Babbitt Ford, not Babbitt Ford.
That
Babbitt,
back.
yeah, Babbitt. Babbitt Outfitters. And it's like that stairwell and then that door. And this guy who is like super high on some kind of psychedelics. First, he goes by on his skateboard and he is like screaming about like, I don't know, some Shakespeare conspiracy theory of like who actually wrote the play or like whatever it was. And then he starts actually climbing that stairwell in the like middle of the play, and he gets to the very top to a balcony that is two stories high, and he's just like in the back of our show, high on drugs, high on a balcony, and he literally puts his arms out and goes, I think I can fly.
Oh no. Oh,
and
no.
At that exact moment, the actor playing Sir Andrew Aguecheek, Marshall Glass, God bless him, he had like seen the whole thing going down and like run up behind the guy on the stairwell, and at that exact moment Marshall just like grabbed the guy and like pulled him back down the stairwell. Oh, so just no. That was definitely the weirdest thing that's ever happened to me while I was on stage, because we all thought like that's it, he's gonna jump, like,
oh my gosh,
yeah, right,
that's crazy
in front of you guys, just
yeah, scary. Yeah, definitely my weirdest on stage moment. Cool. Hannah, you're going to pick one?
I'm going to pick one. Mine's way more serious. So that first question was by Kelsey Hans. Oh, thank you, Kelsey. This next one I really thought was a great question, but is more serious. How can theater be moving toward more environmental sustainability? I felt like this was a really good question, especially for Flag Shakes, because, and especially I feel like the three of us, like we all kind of have our own personal missions towards this, I think, as well. Like, I, for years, like, I got this from my mom. Like, I have a personal, like, just mission to be, like, thrift everything. Like, if it can be used and if I can get it, if it exists in the world already, I don't need to make more. I don't need to create more. So I just find a very, like, close connection to this question. Sorry, I was like kind of spacing there because the dogs outside were barking very loud. So I was like trying to answer the question, but I was also like kind of zoning. So I think here what my answer would be is I would hope that more theaters would move towards the like less is more model, right? And it's really tough because I, out of anyone, love a beautiful costume, love a beautiful set. I think all of those things are incredible, and you know, I appreciate those designers so much. So how can we still create such incredible stuff, but try to reuse? And I know a lot of theaters are very good at this, but like what prop can be just like repainted or touched up, or like rather than buying something, or if we do need to buy something, can we thrift it rather than buying it online? Like, or can we borrow it from an antique store? Can we borrow it just from someone on our board, one of our actors? Like, does someone have that random thing we need? And it does get harder when we get to like a higher level of theater, like really high level professional theater. There's just not that much borrowing happening, right? Like no one's doing that. Like you have a technical director, you have a props designer, like they just do the thing, right? That's their job. So I think it is more at these lower levels, but you know what? While theaters are at these lower levels, I feel like we should really try to be proud of the fact that we're not creating as much waste, that we are reusing. So that's really my thing is like, I would assume, or my suggestion here to this question would be theaters looking into thrifting, borrowing, reusing.
I remember watching a production during the pandemic from the Royal Theater. I think it was the Royal Theater Company. And it was a production they did of Twelfth Night. And it was like, you know, motorcycles, cars, a moving set that had a pool and a fountain and a, and yeah. And I remember thinking during that show, actually, I was like, I could have paid all my actors a living wage for 50 years on whatever they spent on this staging. But you could also look at that from a sustainability, you know, perspective, because it is incredible and beautiful, but it's also not very sustainable because it's being, you know, kind of like ripped all apart for the next show. Though I would say that even in that level, I bet their technical directors are, you know, I hope at least are reusing the wood, are reusing the, you know, like And putting that motorcycle in storage somewhere. I don't know, like I would hope that that's what's happening, but I feel like costumes actually probably get thrown away more frequently in situations like that because very specific costumes are built for very specific characters. And I bet they don't find them as easy to reuse as they do, you know, like a movable wall. Yeah, that's a lot. But you can take off the casters and the 2x4s and the, you know, and reuse it. But I feel like a lot of the costumes get built and then don't get reused
And they're
at
built for
that
specific
level.
bodies. It just depends, like
Yeah,
a
I
couple
think
years.
that's something that I'm proud of that we do, you know, and like how in Phoenix they have Costume Connection, which we've used a lot. And like here locally, we've kind of started our own version of that, of borrowing and lending things to other people. So we do that a ton at Flag Shakes. And I feel like it just makes sense for us just on our budget, but also it makes sense for us because it is sustainable. And then specifically, if you're interested in how to do this and you're doing Shakespeare or interested in Shakespeare, there is the Earth Shakes Alliance. And so we've made some moves based on, you know, what they recommend, which some of them patrons don't like. Like now we have all of our programs are virtual, but that is a lot of waste that we're not creating through printing and recycling and throwing out programs. You know, that kind of takes it all out of there. You just pull it up on your phone and take a look. So things like that, I think, are helpful in moving towards sustainability. What thoughts do you have, Becky?
Oh, I was just going to say a couple years ago, I saw a Shakespeare production, and at the end, they did a jig, which is traditional, but all of the characters or all of the actors had a different costume for just the jig. And I was like, oh, I mean, the effect was cool, but in my mind, I'm like, what intern did you not pay more than like $100 like so that you could do that? Like I'm just like, oh
Becky,
no.
I appreciate that perspective.
Yeah.
But like, that's nice and all, but also, like, what audition intern who like was just sitting at a table for 9 hours could have been paid? That was my first thought when I saw that Royal Theater one. I was like, the salaries that could be like that could be given instead of buying this $150,000 motorcycle. I have no idea how much a motorcycle is, but I was just like, I could have paid all my actors a living wage. Like, why are we spending this much money to create a fountain? Like, I'm all for paying the technical director a living wage too, but like, you know, maybe if we didn't craft a fountain, we would have all of that money to So I agree with you 100%, Becky. That's what I think of first too.
The converse, I have worked with a theater company where that theater company saved like every prop and like it felt like every costume piece that like came their way, they saved. And you know, they were around or are around for like 60 plus years. So their prop storage was
Insane.
like it was huge. And I mean, it was well organized, but it was also like, okay, but do we really need like, I don't know, 18 different whatevers, like when they're all essentially, I don't know, which I mean, good for them for not, like reduce, reuse, recycle. But I was just like, some of it is just collecting dust, though.
Yeah. I feel
Somewhere in
like
the middle.
what's
Somewhere in the
nice
middle.
about Shakespeare is, of course, you can do it with original staging practices, which means that you can cut out a lot of that. And then also, so many of the props are repeats.
I'm back, yeah.
And there's only a couple of instances in which you need a really specific costume piece, like a donkey head or a pair of yellow stockings. So it is quite easy to recycle costumes and even props like letters, candles, poison boxes, like or poison bottles.
Yeah, like steins and there's a lot of
Wine
the
glasses, yeah,
classics that come back,
because Well, that actually, I was hoping we'd get to one more, but I think we actually have to wrap up. We're out of time for today, but we will definitely save the rest of the questions for another Shrews Only Q&A episode.
Yeah, we had a couple of other awesome questions that we will save, and or maybe we'll answer them on like an Instagram live, or I don't know.
Oh, cool.
We'll decide.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be
We could do
fun.
that.
So yeah, thanks. That was awesome. I love when it just gets to be us.
Yeah,
Me
just
too. All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening to this month's episode of Untamed Shrews. I'm Becky.
And I'm Dawn.
And I'm Hannah. Join us for our next episode in November. So crazy. Like, how is it almost? Yep, crazy. Follow Untamed Shrews on our Instagram at Untamed Shrews Podcast and on the Flagshakes website. All episodes of Untamed Shrews can be found wherever you get your podcasts, as well as on sunsounds.org.
Please subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, put us in your Instagram stories, donate at flagshakes.org/donate, become a podcast sponsor, and buy Shrew Crew merch. Help support the Shrew Crew.
This episode of Untamed Shrews, starring Hannah Johnson, Dawn Tucker, and Becky Zaritsky. Show art by Kalia Pilu-Decker. Podcast theme song by Cadence Lamb. Podcast produced and edited by Hannah Johnson. Presented by Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival and recorded with Sun Sounds of Arizona. Special thanks to our audio engineer, Gina Byers. Bye!
Hi, guys!